Blog Talk Radio.
Prepare for launch in 3, 2, 1.
Gentlemen, and however else you choose to identify yourself, it's your boy MC Brooks, Sylvia Rhyme Killer, the most incredible, bringing you guys another great edition of the Breakbeat. Again, I'm your host, the mic controller, master of ceremonies, MC Brooks. Had a little bit of a mishap just now. Got a new theme song. Unfortunately, it looks like I uploaded the instrumental as opposed to the actual song itself, which is kind of crap. But, you know, it happens. Just means you guys will have to wait 2 weeks to actually hear the regular version. Or I could just upload it to SoundCloud and you guys can go tune in and listen that way. Got a jam-packed show for you tonight. But we're going to chill. Tonight's going to be kind of a laid-back edition. Going to kind of switch the style up a little bit. Tonight, it's Black Atheist Roll Call. So all my black non-believers out there, feel free to call in 310-982-4283 to get through. And 4273 to get through. Come on, share your story. You know, I'd love to hear it. Part of what inspired me to want to do this is another expression of solidarity. You know, everyone has a story to tell. And I feel like, you know, all people really need is an ear that'll listen. Share your story, share your experiences. That's how we build connections and eventually build community. You start small and then it expands. And so part of why I wanted to do the show that I'm doing tonight is to do exactly that. So I'm going to talk, I'm going to share my story a little later, but I'm going to do it in two ways. I'm going to actually play a song from my upcoming project, Lines to Stripes, Rhymes to Mics, Volume 3, tonight, that actually kind of talks about how I came, how my non-belief came about in depth. So that'll take place a little bit later on in the show. So I'm going to play the song, and then I'm going to kind of go into a little bit more detail. Because unfortunately, you know, as most writers and most musicians know, there's only but so much you can really compact into a 3 to 4 minute track. So I'm going to definitely do that later on in the show. In the meantime, again, feel free to call in, and you guys can call in a little bit later. In the meantime, we're gonna start off by playing, going through our normal progression, you know, as things normally go around here. So we're going to start out with our announcements. First and foremost, check the archives. Go back in history. We had 4 really amazing shows that took place last week. We had Dissent in the Feminist Community, which is hosted by our very own Kim. We had some mixed topics with Raina on the RSS feed, which is always fascinating. We had respectability politics with Alfred and Carl, which, you know, I kind of touched on a little bit in the last edition of the Breakbeat. And then we had the education to prison pipeline, which had Vita, Emmalin, Muhammad, and a slew of other folks as part of a panel discussion that spoke about the education to prison pipeline. So make sure you go back, check the archives. We had plenty of great shows that took place over the last week, and plenty of great shows that took place even further back than that. So if you missed an episode of the Breakbeat, or you missed any one of the episodes that we have here on Black Free Thinkers, you can go back on the website, or you can look us up on iTunes. You know, play us in your car, play us for your girlfriend, play us at your wedding. Well, maybe not your wedding, but play us. You know, that's what we're here for. Using what we do to educate the people. I have two things I kind of want to get into a little bit before I jump right into the hot topics that have been going on the last couple of days. First of all, I want to publicly acknowledge all of you who are listening, and I want to publicly acknowledge those who will listen and those who know what's been going on with me in the past 2 weeks, but in my personal life. It's been really, 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 really trying time, and I just really wanted to let everyone know on there that I appreciate all the love that's been shown to me. It's been a trying time for me and my family. Fortunately, my mother is doing well. So, you know, things are beginning to look up, but it's been a rough couple weeks, and I really haven't posted much or participated much or as much as I normally do in the Facebook and Twitter sphere as I normally do, just because, you know, there's been a lot that's going on. So I just wanted to publicly say thank you. Everything is appreciated, and I mean, I would just give each and every one of you a giant bear hug if I could. But can't, mostly because y'all ain't here. Or y'all might have something, in which case you wouldn't get a hug, just like a wave, you know, from like a couple feet away. Yeah. But anyway, so that I just wanted to make sure I put that out there in the universe. You know, special thanks to my BFT family, you know, to my homies at Grand Unified, all my homies in my personal life, and like I said, just I very, very much appreciate everything, that all the love that I've been shown in the past 2 weeks. Okay, now that I've got that out the way. I wanted to talk a little bit about our next episode. In 2 weeks, I'm going to have a pretty spectacular show planned. It's a show on a topic that really has not, as far as I know, has never really been discussed on this network. And I'm going to talk about otaku culture, blurred culture, here on the air. In case you're unfamiliar, an otaku is someone who is into Japanese anime. I've been an otaku for years. I love anime. I love video games. You know, I totally nerded out. I've been going to conventions ever since I was 17 years old. I've been going to them since 2005 when I went to my first convention. So in 2 weeks, I kind of want to dive into that subject, because dealing with minorities in a minority is always kind of a fascinating topic to discuss. And otaku culture is always interesting from many different angles. And there's always a lot to unpack, you know. it's one of those cultures that you think everyone is accepting and everything is kind of cool, but you know, beneath the surface, you find that there are issues on a multitude of levels that often don't get discussed or don't get discussed or brought up at all. So in 2 weeks, that's what we're going to discuss. I'm going to have a panel on. I've got a couple guests already lined up. It's going to be a fantastic show. I thoroughly encourage you all to listen in, to share, and, you know, even call in, just in case you are unfamiliar or you don't really know anything about it, in which case I would suggest to you, you know, do some research or just, you know, listen. Best way to learn, just by giving a listening ear with no judgments, no shade, no anything. Prime example of this would be this past weekend, I was in Baltimore for an anime convention. And someone I've been very good friends with via the internet lives in Baltimore now. And we decided to actually link up while I was up there. You know, finally, you know, hang out, meet face to face, and actually talk. And, you know, hang out. So it did. We finally got together, had a whole bunch of laughs. It's a great time. It's a really, really, really great time. While I was walking her back to her apartment or wherever she was going, she decided to ask me something that she's always wanted to ask me, but she never got around to, or she never thought she was going to be able to do without interrupting. And she asked me about my atheism. You know, like, why don't I believe in God? You know, why am I against religion? You know, why do I, you know, openly critique the Abrahamic faith so much? And she told me that, you know, she wasn't going to respond or interrupt. She just wanted to listen. And she just wanted to kind of get an understanding. And, like, that really resonated with me because I feel like that, above anything else, is absolutely what is needed. More understanding. Less attacks, less getting at people, more understanding. Because at the end of the day, we're all people. And lots of us, despite our religious or political differences, you know, we have a lot of the same issues. You know, break it down, we're all skin and bones. We all fuck, fight, eat, and shit the same way. And, like, once she asked me this, I responded. And I gave her detailed answers, and I made sure to present my answers in such a way that I would not cause offense, and I would not come off as I'm better than, because I feel like oftentimes when we have these dialogues between atheists and theists, far too often, on one side of the equation, we don't know how to speak to each other while being respectful of their beliefs. Like, even just by nature of calling something Sky Daddy often can come off as insulting. You know, we're all adults, and we should all be able to speak to each other as adults. You know, which is why when I engage in these conversations, I try to use as much respectful language as possible. You know, I may say something like Sky Daddy or whatever when I'm around homies or whatever, but for the most part, I try to be respectful in these conversations because I don't want to misrepresent myself, and I don't want what I have to say be misrepresented. You know, I've said this way too many times for me to have to say it again, but Language is important. Words are important. What you say and how you say something are everything. You can say something and present it in a way that's not favorable, and your whole point can be missed. That's exactly why you have to be careful with the language that you choose. And I try that. And at the end of our conversation, after she asked me everything she wanted to ask, you know, she understood, or at least I felt like she understood, and understood better than any way I probably could have written it out or texted. You know, for me, as far as the religious aspect is concerned, it's not about trying to deconvert or anything like that. It's not about that for me. For me, I just want them to understand. Because I do understand. I've been a Christian. I can understand what attracts people to some of these faiths. I can understand how some of the text and what they read makes sense to them. I can understand that. And it's because I can understand that I know that I have to approach it a certain way. You know, you can't be disrespectful if you want someone to understand and to be respectful. You know, they say respect is earned, and that's how it is even in these debates. It's earned. You have to be respectful and give a respectful tone. So I don't go after, I don't argue, none of that. I just simply converse. And I guarantee, and I use myself as evidence and what I've learned over the last couple of years, just by simple conversation, you can open more minds than you do when you're trolling Facebook statuses or trolling tweets. I mean, trolling can be fun. It can also be informative. But far too often, whatever point you're trying to make will be lost in the sauce. Completely lost. So that being said, let's jump a little bit into our hot topics here. Got a slew of things that I definitely want to bring up. I've got about five or six things queued up here. Let's see how many we can run through right quick. Excuse me. We can start off with this one right here. In Tennessee, Nashville to be specific, a judge ruled that a baby had to change its first name from Messiah to Martin just for the simple fact that no one except Jesus Christ is the Messiah. Therefore, his name has to be changed. Now, I was late coming to this story. I saw this come across my Facebook feed handful of times. I ignored it but I just kind of scrolled over it because just by the tagline, I knew that if I read it, I was probably going to be pissed off. And I didn't want to be pissed off, so I didn't bother with it. So, with that being said, a couple days ago, I actually decided to, finally read this story. And the story, as I expected, pissed me off. And it pissed me off just because courts should not have the power to do that, to tell someone that their name, or they're not good enough to be named that. You know, this kind of speaks a bit to respectability politics. You know, you're not respectable enough to have this name. Despite the fact that even if Jesus Christ actually existed, he does not hold a monopoly on Messiah or what Messiah means. Because 9 out of 10 times, folks name their child for a name that A, they like, and B, has a meaning to it. And I don't understand how a judge feels like they have the authority to order a name change. I mean, for one thing, the order should be thrown out right off the bat just for the simple fact that a judge should not be emotionally invested in this case, meaning whatever the issue was regarding, you know, between the parents, which is why they were there, should have focused on that. Instead, you get in your feelings and you order this child to have his name changed, which is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. There was absolutely no need for that judge to go there. But it just speaks to, again, like I said, respectability politics. You know, the baby's not respectful of it, and so you change it to Martin, you know, against, you know, the parents' wishes. But here's the interesting thing. One of the interesting things I found is that Messiah is actually a relatively popular baby name. In fact, it was number 4 on the list of, like, baby names in 2012. You know? So I was kind of surprised at that Messiah was gaining popularity. But I feel like if you allow judges to be able to do this, where do you draw the line? Like, why is his name? Why can't we? You know, I feel like if this is how we're gonna go, then we need to take it a step further. Let's ban Nevehe, you know, people who spell to give the child the name Heaven backwards. Or why don't we get rid of Christian, you know? We can get rid of Christian. Like, where do you draw the line? You don't. And if we allow the stuff like this to happen, you know, they're never going to draw the line. You know, parents name their children. It's not up to the judge. It's not the judge's child. The judge doesn't have the authority to rename a child. It's not their place to even impose their faith. In this case, you have to deal with whatever the case is, not deal with the child's name. You know, if you do that, why don't you get rid of Emmanuel, another biblical name, or John, Mary. These are all Ruth, Esther. These are biblical figures. Where do you draw the line? You don't. They're not going to draw the line. That's why stuff like this shouldn't even be allowed to happen in the first place. I hope those parents sue. I really do. I hope they sue, and I hope they not only get to change the name back to Messiah, but they get any money or damages or whatever the case that they get from it, because that's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely. Speaking of ridiculous, a story, I actually read this right before I came on air. It's another story that had been kind of floating across Facebook, but I hadn't actually gotten the chance to read it due to me kind of still recovering from my weekend. Down in Atlanta, there's a black teenager. His name is Anthony Stokes, who needs a heart transplant because he has an enlarged heart. So at the moment, he has roughly about 6 months to live, which is why he needs the transplant. Now, for some reason, a council decided, nah, this guy ain't good enough to have his life saved. So it was denied. They denied this child. They denied his heart transplant. And this caused an uproar on the internet, as you would expect. But this particularly struck a curve with me, because struck a chord with me, for the simple fact that this again goes to respectability politics, and it also speaks to again how much black life is valued or not valued here in this, here in America. I just don't understand or don't know what it's going to take for you know many other people to really get fed up. Black life is not valued. My life, my sisters, my parents, my friends, rest of my family, my neighbors, people I work with, their lives aren't valued. They never have been here. And it just goes to show right here that that even if you are, what's the word I'm looking for, a vagrant or a problem child, or you may not have the best grades at school, you know, you may get in trouble a lot. You may be a loudmouth. You know, you may like to not listen to your parents, you know, stuff that kids do. You may do all of that, and at the end of the day, that's enough. That's enough for them to say, well, you know what? You don't deserve to live. You don't deserve the opportunity to change your life around and eventually go do something with it. You don't deserve that opportunity. You've thrown that all away before you've even really had a chance to live. 15 is not that old. 15, you're just starting to discover your likes, dislikes, thinking about what you may want to do when you're older. Just goes to show that even things that you cannot control, such as having an enlarged heart or some other type of medical condition, that your life is not valued, that it doesn't matter to them at all. Doesn't matter. Your life is not of value. You're not worth being saved. You know, when Noah is packing the animals onto the ark, he's going to leave you behind because you aren't good enough. The bar is here, and you just don't reach that. I don't know how many times, you know, I see national, you know, commercials and attention brought to, you know, an 8-year-old white kid who needs a lung or something. But yet, 15-year-old black child who needs a heart because he has 6 months to live, nah, yeah, he's lived enough. He'd probably be dead by 18. The more I think about this, the angrier I get. And the angrier I get, the more I start to feel like I'm sort of drifting into this weird space where when something happens to white children, I may not feel all that sad about it. I don't want to feel that way because I don't want to be desensitized, and I do believe that all human life, regardless of how good or bad a person is of value. I do believe that, but hearing, you know, story after story of how much this country just does not care if young black and brown children grow up to have the opportunity to pursue their dreams, it kind of makes me extremely apathetic. not towards my black and brown brothers and sisters, but towards the children of the oppressors. That's how I feel. I don't want to feel that way, but I feel myself sort of drifting in that manner. And I don't want to. It's a scary place. It's a very, 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 very scary place. Not a place that I really want to be or want to get to. Fortunately, though, I do have good news. The panel did decide to overturn their decision. And he's been placed on the list for a heart transplant, which is great. It's absolutely great. But again, I feel like even with that, this should not stop here. There should be serious discussion, you know, or serious inquiry into why was he denied in the first place. Why a panel of old privileged white men decided that this young black life was not worth saving. He didn't deserve the opportunity to grow up. That's what I hope happens. Some serious inquiry to find out why exactly he was denied in the first place. I'm happy that he's on the list, but I'm not happy that I still don't understand why he was denied and then why subsequently they decided to change their mind. All of a sudden, after public outcry, oh, yeah, this black life is worth saving. Which just goes to show that they didn't even change their mind because they wanted to. They changed their mind because people noticed that they denied this kid and they were like, yo, what the fuck? Just goes to show, they say it's not worth saving. Sad, it's very fucking sad. And you, again, I keep speaking to respectability. They don't respect black life. They never have, and it'll probably be a long shot before they will. And it's interesting because you find this in all areas, even in movements where you would expect some sort of solidarity, like the feminism movement, for example, except that solidarity is actually for white women. Because as we find far too often in the feminist movement, that the voices you hear, the faces you see, the opinions that are considered important are from people who don't look like me, don't look like my sisters, my mother, or my female coworkers. They don't. It's interesting. Feminism always is under attack. It's under attack from white men, black men, and from basically people who have little to no understanding of what feminism actually is. Feminism is not about trying to establish a matriarchy or trying to say that women are better than men. It's a response. It's a response to the system of patriarchy and male dominance in this country. It's a response to being labeled feminine and being told that basically because you were born as a woman, this is the rigid standard of which that you have to adhere to. That's what feminism is. But even in the feminism movement, you find that, you know, issues that affect minority women of color, are often ignored or overlooked or said that it's not important. They're not good. This is not good enough or worthy of my attention. You black women, you women of color just need to fall in line with what I find important. Don't worry about stuff that affects you, even if it's my fault. So, Black Twitter, if you're not hip to Black Twitter, you need to go and get hip. You know, started a hashtag, Solidarity is for White Women. I wanted to read a couple of these tweets, and I wanted to kind of give a little bit of my opinion on, you know, what I heard or what I got from these tweets. Solidarity is for White Women. When there's an article that says the new shades of feminism, yet the only shade that you see in all these women are white women. They're all white. There's no shade. You know, solidarity is for white women. When you call yourself an ally but get defensive when questioned about the lack of intersectionality in feminism. Solidarity is for white women. When you think it's okay for a satirical newspaper to call a 9-year-old black girl a cunt. Solidarity is for white women having no position on affirmative action. When women of color are treated as teaching tools and resources, but not actual people. Stuff like that. Stuff like that are why this is important. Now, unfortunately, the goal of this is probably going to be overlooked. It's probably going to be misunderstood. It's probably going to go over heads as expected. But that's what happens. Not everyone gets it. And that's why actual conversations need to be had. Understanding needs to be had. This goes back to the point I made earlier in the show. Understanding, communication. That's the problem with that's one of the problems with the feminism movement. Now, before I say too much more, I do have to understand that, well, I am a black male, and there are certain privileges that I have as a male. So I don't want to completely go too far in, because my voice on this issue is not the voice that really needs to be heard, although I can offer my voice and my support as an ally to the movement, because there are many principles that I stand behind as far as feminism and womanism is concerned. Now, I lost my train of thought. Whew. So what happens when you do all that talking? You lose your train of thought hella quick. now I remember. It's all too important to illustrate illustrate the fact that when you look at feminism, far too often women of color's voices are not heard. They're constantly being policed as to whether their behaviors and whatnot are acceptable, which is really ironic considering the movement is supposed to be all-inclusive. Now, interestingly enough, a guy who's popular among the white privilege department is a man named Tim Wise. Tim Wise has been featured on Melissa Harris Perry. He speaks all over the country. He's got a couple different books. You know, he can definitely say some things that are very much on point. But you know what? Broken clock is right twice a day. Broken clock. But Tim Wise tried to troll the Solidarity is for White Women hashtag by saying this. He tweeted this out. Apparently, a handful of irrelevant self-professed radicals think Twitter wars are activism. No. You are fighting with yourselves. Have fun. Let me be the first, as a black male who allies to the feminism movement, to raise my right hand, raise my left hand, put down my thumbs, my pinkies, my pointers, and my ring fingers. Now, which one is left? Pretty sure you can figure that out. And with those, with this one finger means, first thing I have to say to Tim Wise. Won't say it on there because I know that you can probably figure it out. But that's the first thing I have to say. My second thing I have to say is social media activism is real. And I don't care how much people don't want to acknowledge it or act like it's not there, but all of activism is not going out and standing outside protesting and whatnot. There are many different roles to be played within the activist movement. There are many different roles. You have guys that are out there on the front lines. And then you have guys that write checks that help fund a lot of the events that get thrown. And then we live in the 21st century, a technology age. So we're living in a time where you can cause an outcry through social media. You know, overseas they've had revolutions. Because of social media. That's how people were able to connect and plan. Social media. They had movements. That's why all of these places, the first thing they want to do is block access to Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, MySpace, and any other social networking site that you think of and can get your hands on. The first thing a lot of these governments are doing are banning these sites, so stuff like what's happened overseas can't happen. So just because you don't subscribe to social media activism does not take away from it and does not mean that it's irrelevant at all. And thirdly, he says that they're fighting with yourselves. No, they're not, because white women don't represent black women. They never have, and they don't have black women's best interests at heart. Yeah, there are plenty of white women who definitely do ally and do take the time out to understand the issues that specifically affect women of color. But overall, white women couldn't, you know, they don't give two shits about issues that affect women of color at all. It's the same reason you had white women coming out the woodworks to defend the Onion when they called Kwavenjanay a cunt, even if it was satire, as if that somehow makes it okay. Like, oh, he just called her a cunt. It's cool. They were just joking. No, that's not cool. That's not something that I stand for. That's not something you should stand for. See, that was an unprovoked attack going under the guise of comedy. Come on. Come on now. If that's your comedy bit, you probably need to do better. So, I reiterate the first two things. I'll reiterate the first two things I said to Tim Wise. And I hope he goes and kick rocks. Hope he goes and kicks rocks. Speaking of other people that need to kick rocks, I'm going to transition a little bit and bring on one of my favorite segments. Come on, Son. Now, this week in Come On, Son, this goes out to Russell Simmons. Now, I just heard about this literally 10 minutes before I went on air. Literally 10 minutes before I go on air, this was brought to my attention by my colleague, Randa Rhodes, of the RSS feed. I had no clue that this even existed until just now. Now, apparently, Russell Simmons has a YouTube channel called the All Deaf Digital Network, or the Ad Digital Network. Now, on this, there's a video called Harriet Tubman Sex Tape, in which Harriet's, you know, trying to help a slave escape, and in trying to do that, she decides to seduce and have sex with her slave master. I can tell you straight up, those same two fingers I gave to Tim Wise, I'm giving to Russell Simmons. He gets a huge Come On, Son for this, because there's nothing funny about rape or slavery or rape that involves slaves. Anyone who knows anything about slavery or this era knows that slaves were raped. There was no consensual. There was no consensus. Millions of black women of all ages were consistently and frequently raped by their slave masters. And for some reason, this nigga has the audacity, I'm sorry, I'm getting angry as I'm doing this, this nigga has the audacity to create a skit called the Harriet Tubman Sex Tape? Really? Of all the things to write about, of all the things to bring attention to, this is what you spent your money on. This is what you decided. Like, the idea was gotten here, and you thought it was brilliant. A Harriet Tubman sex tape, trying to romanticize and make fun of something that happened years ago that absolutely destroyed the psyche of so many black women and children. And you think that this is funny? I have no respect for folks who do this. You know, comedy used to be used as a form of activism, as a form of bringing about a social change, highlighting issues by making people laugh, because the point you're making underneath it is a point that people actually have to think about. Why do you think Richard Pryor was so great? Because what he said was real. Chris Rock, what he says, if you strip the joke down and get rid of the actual humor aspects of it, you break down exactly what's being said and you realize, wow, that's what comedy is supposed to do. It's supposed to entertain, but underneath the entertainment, there's also supposed to be a point to it. And we have people out here making shit like this, making videos sort of romanticizing slavery for the sake of romanticizing it. There's nothing funny about rape. There's nothing funny about slavery. And I don't understand how you as a black man with some relative knowledge of your history and some relative knowledge of how black people have been treated in this country since its inception, and you think, this is the great thing to do with my first YouTube video? Let's joke about slave sex with their slave master. Yeah, that's brilliant. I'm down with that. I'm cool with that. That's a great idea. Russell, come on, son. You need to know better. You need to know better, and you need to do better. Because there's no excuse for that. No excuse for that whatsoever. And I won't stand for this shit. I couldn't even get halfway through it. I skipped ahead in it, and I still could not bring myself to finish. For me, I didn't endure slavery, and I'm not really sure. But just the sheer image, the sheer thought of that angers me. It pisses me off. It puts me in a foul mood. When I think about how many slaves had their humanity stripped from them because they were property, and so their dehumanization was acceptable because they were property. They weren't people. And you think, and for some reason, Russell Simmons thinks that this is brilliant. This is comedy. This would be a funny thing to make a video about. Like, this is some shit that you think of when you're high as fuck, chilling in your mama's basement at 4 in the fucking morning. This is not some shit you actually go out and decide to make a video about. So, Russell, come on, son. Do better. That being said, let's transition a little bit. I want to talk about one more thing before getting to the roll call and before I play my new song or a new song off my upcoming project called Alone. Kendrick Lamar. Anyone who knows me knows I love hip-hop, and anyone who knows me knew I was going to have something to say about this verse. Kendrick Lamar dropped a verse the other day on the song Control, by Big Sean, featuring Kendrick and also featuring J Electronica. Now, this track has had the hip-hop world buzzing ever since it dropped. Because Kendrick arguably has the verse of the year so far, which is a pretty bold statement to make, but one that you probably could seriously make an argument for. Now, I'm not a big Kendrick fan. I like a couple of his songs. I liked a couple of tracks off his Good Kid, Mad City joint. But lots of folks are getting so caught up and calling it a diss just because he actually name dropped. But here's the reason I don't have a problem with it. See, name dropping is an issue if you're a no name and you're trying to say names to get your shine up, to throw attention to yourself. Kendrick doesn't need that. He's already arguably the top lyricist of the past couple years, or one of the top lyricists, top MCs, and he doesn't need the name drop. And if you look at it in this context, he's saying, like you guys, but I'm trying to, this is competition. And if you step in my lane, you're going to get dealt with, which is to be expected. It's no different than in sports. You know, when you play a sport, you may be friends with guys on other teams. You may, you know, they may be family. You know, they may be dating your sister. You know, you might have went to high school with them. You know, you might have been roommates in college, something. You know lots of these guys. And so, you know, when you're not on the field or in the off season, you might be chilling with them. You know, y'all would be cool. But you know, soon as the coin flip happens and you put the helmet and your pads on, all that goes out the window because you're trying to be better than them. So it's competition. And that's exactly what this Kendrick verse is. It's meant to be competition. You know? It's calling a whole bunch of folks out saying, hey, step your bars up. And it's huge. Hip-hop needed something like this because it's not like it was some underground rapper who you know, mainstream ignores. This is someone in the mainstream actively saying, yo, step your bars up. Your bars are trash. Simple. Simple as that. Take the challenge. Kendrick, I mean, like I said, Kendrick doesn't have the best or the greatest of rap voices, but he absolutely demolished that verse. And in this context, I have no issue. It's a beautiful thing what he did for hip-hop. An absolutely beautiful thing that he did for hip-hop. And I'm very much a fan if this means that we'll get better bars out of a lot of these mainstream cats who have been getting by on dope beats and a decent flow. That being said, now time to kind of transition a little bit. Going to get into the roll call. But before I do that, I want to share my story with y'all. And before I share my story with you guys, I want to play my song for you guys. This song is track number 12 off my upcoming project, Lines to Stripes, Rhymes to Mics, Volume 3. This track is called Alone. This is somewhat of an explanation of how I came to my non-belief. This track is not finished, per se. I actually have to edit, do a couple more edits, but I feel like the track as it stood was good enough to put out and at least good enough to play on the show tonight. So after I get back, I'll talk a little bit about the song and what inspired it. And I'll throw the phone number up so you guys can call in, ask some questions, or just share your story. All right, this is Alone.
I went to private school most of my life, trying to get closer to Christ. A sober thought, devoting my life to scripture, making sure I'm quoting it right. Walking ever close to the light, but the notes that I write aren't genuine. And so I'm questioning the foundation of the sentiment. Saying, the more I think about it, my thoughts are so crowded. And the more I research, the more that I will read, the more I started doubting everything that I believed. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. How they running shit convinced me that my life is a sunken ship that needs to be resurrected, so I didn't wreck it. This is the message, they tell me it's a blessing. I need to go, cause even if I say I feel, come on, I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like. Control of my own life. Went to high school surrounded by the Catholics, agnostic thoughts in my head, I couldn't fathom it. Priest, family, and friends was all passionate about these ideas, but I really wasn't having it. I wanted to believe that book, I really wanted to, but atheism was the reality my world was coming to. So I put it in perspective, it was hard to accept it, so I started to reject it. Non-believer, free thinker, couldn't push the feeling to the side like a street sweeper. Couldn't bury the emotion in a deep freezer, unable to communicate like a cheap speaker. This is me making sense of the madness, told my friends about it and they're wondering what happened. So I drift into the unknown, friends become strangers and stop trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. Years later, here I am at 25. The non-believers scaring children like Pennywise. Many died from a faith-filled, troubled life. American history drenched in the blood of Christ. Nothing nice about trying to live puppet-like. Squad don't covet the Bible, only covet Mike. And it's all okay, so I know I'll never ever say started living for the first time, was never born again. After I realized that I was never born in sin, I was born to win words to my man adequate. It's only my rap verses be immaculate. Mind relieved so I can find peace. Black man who led belief in the divine seed. I found a new home long gone to the days where I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life.
It's okay to be an atheist because it's okay to be yourself. It is okay to be true to yourself. I can't stress that enough. I remember my state of mind before I came out of the closet as an atheist, and I was a liar. I lied to people that I ministered to. I ministered the Bible and the things that I was taught in the church, but I no longer believed it. I was following the script. And it was okay for me to follow the script because I felt coming out as an atheist was not an option at that time. When I became tired of the liar I had become, I had no choice but to come out as an atheist.
And we're back. And by we, I mean me. I think, yeah, my mic is on. So that was a new track from my upcoming project, Lines to Stripes, Rhymes to Mics, Volume 3. The track, again, is called Alone. Track 12 on my upcoming CD. This is a song that I've been kind of wrestling with for a really long time. On my first CD that I put out in 2009, I had a track on there called Stones at Christ, which was pretty much my first actual attempt at, you know, kind of talking about talking about my opinion on religion, and also speaking somewhat about how I came into, you know, my non-belief. But as much as I like that song, I don't think I went in depth enough, and I don't think I really explained in kind of detail, and then at the same time kind of updated, you know, exactly where I stand at this very moment. So I wrote this song a couple months ago, and truthfully, it was nothing but the first verse for the longest time. The first verse and like half of the second verse. Then, as I was entering what I call the final stages of my CD, because I'm in the mixing phase right now, and I finally finished writing it, it kind of allowed me to really kind of rethink and assess, you know, where I was on this, you know. Because I'm honestly at a point right now where I don't think, you know, I don't really think about my non-belief, or I don't really think about religion or religious faith or any religious concepts anymore. I mean, I may think of them in relation to something, but them isolated, not really so much. So this song is a song that I'm very proud of, and I feel like I can be proud of it because it's a song, like I said, I've been wrestling with for a while, and I finally finished it, and I finally managed to, like, show people right now at this very moment exactly how I'm feeling and what I think. But I can share my story and go a little bit more in depth than the song itself did. I was raised in a Catholic household. Both of my parents are Catholics. Both of my sisters are also Catholic. I was raised in a Catholic household, and I never really kind of understood, you know, the whole purpose of going to church. Never really understood the whole purpose of prayer and all of this stuff. You know, I did a lot of it because it was what was expected of me. You know, I didn't understand it, but they said I had to do it, so I did it. You know, it was no different than the Pledge of Allegiance. But I was always an inquisitive kid, even though I kept to myself a lot. I always thought about stuff. And a lot of this stuff never really kind of made any sense to me. But the way it was explained to me is that it wasn't supposed to make sense because it wasn't for me to understand, just for me to believe. You know, I used to ask my old religion teacher questions all the time. You know, how did they have a baby and they didn't have sex? You know, how did a man walk on water, but you can't really walk on water? That's not possible. And oftentimes I got half-assed answers to these questions. But again, I kept on believing because that is what was expected of me. I was supposed to believe. Hence, that's why I went along with it for so long. As I got older, and I really started to, you know, to think about things, stuff really stopped making sense. And truthfully, you know, I found myself just kind of living my life independent of that stuff. You know, my family, we weren't churchgoers. Like, we went every now and then and for holidays, but, you know, most Sundays we were all in the house getting ready for football. So I never, to some degree, I kind of grew up without really having to think about it that much or with it, without it really ever having any importance to me. You know, I got baptized. I had communion and I had confirmation. But I didn't want to do any of that shit. Again, did it because I thought I was supposed to. You know, I was like, I'm black. I'm supposed to believe in God. You know, my family does. All my friends do. Obviously, this is something I'm supposed to be doing. Otherwise, people wouldn't be doing it. That was how I rationalized a lot of it. Now, when I got to the age of about, you know, 13, 14, actually, when I got to 14, I lashed out. And I openly embraced my inner rebel. You know, like, I'd always been, for a couple years, kind of anti-everything, you know? Like, when, you know, everyone else would be obsessed over Usher, or all these rappers, and me, you know, I'm just trying to play Pokemon with my friends, you know, or I'm trying to watch Cartoon Network. I don't really care about TRL. When I got to 14, like, I really, really lashed out. And I was just like, fuck everything. But when I got to, on top of everything, I was in Catholic school. I had gone to Catholic elementary school, middle school, and I was on my way to a Catholic high school. Now, I loved history, and like my teacher, my freshman year, like he really engaged me and really, really, really made me interested in history. But the more I learned about history, the more I kind of thought, you know, I kind of, for whatever reason, juxtaposed that against my faith. Like, I couldn't really rationalize the problem of evil. It didn't make sense. If something is all good, how does something that's all good create evil? And even if you were to blame humans for bringing evil into the world, the all good guy who created the world had to establish evil at a point where it could be brought about, whether through his own will or through humans. If you don't want evil to exist, you don't create evil. It's as simple as that. And I couldn't rationalize slavery and the Holocaust. I'm like, all these people, my ancestors, prayed, and they were still drowned. They were still whipped, lynched, shot, raped, beaten, starved, treated like animals. But yet, he apparently loves us. I couldn't rationalize that. I couldn't rationalize someone who would allow that. You know, and I'm supposed to call him my father, you know? I had a father, and he's a great man, but I couldn't respect my father if that's how my father treats his children, you know? You look at a man nowadays, and I mean, you look at someone nowadays, and you see that they're allowing their kids to run wild and to have all this bad stuff happen to them. And you're like, yo, what kind of parent is that? Like, the way the kids act is a reflection of the parent. And at the time, when I looked at, you know, when I looked at 9/11, which had just happened, and I looked at, you know, all these things that they're going on throughout history, it didn't make sense. But unlike previous times where I was told that I just had to pray about it, I was like, this, there's no way that this can exist. This, it's not possible for something like this to exist. It's not. And I went on my Zanga, just goes to show my age right there. Any of y'all out there even know or remember what Zanga is? I had a Zanga post that I wrote many years ago, basically going off about how there's no way a God that allowed great evil to happen could be an all-loving deity. That it wasn't possible. And I said that, you know, the only logical conclusion is that God doesn't exist. Because the God as described couldn't possibly exist and allow all this evil stuff to happen. Nor could he even be all good and completely and create evil. And then, on top of that, I said, and even if he did exist, you know what? He's not worth following. He's not. He's not worth following. I did not want to subscribe to someone who could allow shit like that to happen. You know, I'm not a selfish person. I'm all about helping folks, and I've been about that my entire life. And like, it didn't make sense to me, you know. Like, I knew I was privileged, and I knew that I had stuff, but, you know, I'm walking by homeless people on my way home from school. You know, I'm walking by these downtrodden houses, you know. A lot of my schoolmates, you know, wore a lot of the same clothes to school every day because they couldn't afford it. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way possible. Absolutely no way possible. And Raina, I see your call. I'm gonna take your call in just a second. Let me finish this point real quick. And that being said, you know, I just kind of said it. I was like, I don't believe, and that was that. And I kind of kept it to myself. Honestly, I didn't tell anybody. I just kind of went along with life as if nothing was the same. I mean, and honestly, at 14, like, I didn't really understand how, you know, what exactly I was saying. So I found myself sometimes saying and doing a lot of the same stuff. You know, something bad would happen, I'd be like, God, please don't do this or don't do that. It wasn't for another year or two that I had actually completely kind of washed myself of that stuff. And then, you know, the more I started to learn, the more I started to realize that, you know what, it's not even possible. It's not possible for that deity to exist. God wasn't necessary for my life, so I just continued to not even really bother with it. Okay. We got Raina on the line. Wait.
Hey, guys. Oh, we're a cowboy now?
No, please don't. You already know where my loyalty lies.
Cowboy Brooks. No. Anyway, no, I was just calling in to, you know, to add my name to the roll call.
Oh, check you out. But you hit one.
Yeah, I hit one. No, I mean, I guess if I was going to say what my story was.
Yeah, share your story.
Briefly,
I got 43 minutes to kill.
Oh.
But you're not to say take up the whole time, but.
No, I know. And my story doesn't take 43 minutes. But I started off, I mean, I wasn't raised in a super religious household, but I was a believer early on. I was taught the Bible, but I was very interested in reading the Bible. And, like, I think when I was a kid, like, it was mainly the stories, you know, like, there's some epic stories in the Bible, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, some really violent stuff. I think one of my children's Bible books actually had, like, some very violent scenes, you know, depicted. And, I think I was fascinated by some of them. Like, I think I was fascinated by the story of Samson in particular, because they had, like, these epic drawings of, like, Samson, like, you know, with a holding a bloody jaw of an ass, you know. then there was the other scene where he had, like, you know, he was in between the pillars and you could see, like, the muscles and, you know what I mean? And, like, they had even drawn the veins kind of how it's popping, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty epic. So I got into the stories, I think, very early on. But, you know, I got, like, you know, the little prayer books and things like that. And I believed in God. And, you know, I thought there was this, you know, this dude who was kind of looking out for me a little bit, you know? And, But I started getting older, and some things just didn't make any sense to me, you know, because I was very interested in, I kind of had this idea that if there was this God that was looking out for me, and we're supposed to be like God, then I'm supposed to be looking out for something. And I was like, well, what's the something I'm supposed to be looking out for? And I was like, well, I guess it must be the world around me. And so, like, when I was looking at the world around me, I was like, oh, well, you know, I love animals. You know what I mean? So I was like, maybe I'll be a vet. So when I'm learning about animals and I'm learning about biology and all this stuff, I come across this dude named Darwin. You know what I mean? And I was like, what is this dude talking about? Obviously, God made everything. You know what I mean? And
right.
my first experience was after, you know, was trying to reconcile, you know, what I was learning in science with what I believed about God. And I couldn't reconcile the two. So I just figured that maybe it was just, I took the liberal theistic view, which is the Bible holds, you know, significant fundamental truths, and that the people who wrote it didn't necessarily have the language, you know what I mean, if the things that they saw really happened, to really account for them, you know what I mean, in a way that we would interpret correctly. So I said, okay, well, the Bible is just, you know, full of these wonderful stories and these moral lessons, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, the next thing was, okay, well, let's get into the lessons. Well, when I got to the lessons, I'm like, well, wait a second. You know, like, this doesn't make any sense. And why would the God, you know, destroy people, you know, for sins that he knew that they were going to commit even before they were born?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, what kind of God does that? That sounds like a really sick kind of game. You know what I mean? That's like, that's like some Saw shit. Like that, I mean, Saw is like the closest approximation that I can make to it, because at the time I didn't have a Saw reference. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it didn't make any sense to me. It seemed like some really sadistic shit. And, you know, so, you know, it was that, and then I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe again, this is just a book that was written by some men, you know, blah, 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 blah. Fundamental truth, right? So
right.
I'm left with even less of the Bible to believe in than what I started with. You know what I mean? So I get about 17 and I'm like, well, wait a second. Like, if I'm making decisions about what's good and what's bad without the Bible, why do I need the Bible? You know what I mean? And that's when I was out of the Bible. And then just from there, it was just like, you know, studying different religions and, you know, I still believe in God, but I didn't believe in, you know, the God of the Bible and all that sort of thing. But then I came to several realizations. I was like, well, what good is this God if it doesn't intervene to stop evil. It created the world, but essentially looks like it left it alone, because I was a deist by this point. I was like, so why should I even care? You know what I mean? And so when I stopped caring, like, I was calling myself agnostic. So, and then after that, I was like, okay, well, the concept makes no sense. And then I was an atheist, but resisting the label, because I didn't want to be affiliated, you know, with those people that go around and, you know, all they do is just like, oh, you're stupid. You know what I mean? And blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what held me back for so long. But, you know, of course, now I'm an atheist, and a lot of people know me because I've had some pretty epic battles with folks.
epic indeed.
Over religion and, you know, various forms of you know, pseudoscience and, you know, irrational belief or thought. So that's where I am now. I'm just, you know, I'm a skeptical, you know, humanist, feminist, you know, agnostic atheist, which means I'm just trouble.
Total trouble.
I ask questions and I don't accept what I'm told. I know. I'm just a bad woman. I'm just a bad woman. I don't know my place.
Next thing you know, you're going to tell me that you don't go in the kitchen at all.
No, I actually cook, but I don't. I cook when
okay.
I feel like
it's not all bad.
I don't cook on demand. I'm not a short order cooker.
Oh, see, now you're messing up again.
I mean, it is what it is. You know, if you want eggs in the morning, I don't feel like it. You cook your own eggs. That's how it is. You know. So
wait. Okay. Okay. So wait. When I met you, I won't say where we met, but when I met you. At what stage were you?
When you initially met me,
yeah.
When you initially met me, when you initially ran across me, I was still in that I'm an atheist, you know what I mean? But resisting it, and I kind of had some back and forth a little bit because even when I was sure that there probably was no God, there was an impulse in me. From having been raised in, you know, like I said, it wasn't a strong, like, faith because I wasn't in a house where, like, I was like, you better believe in God or, you know, I didn't get slapped like Benita, you know what I mean? Like, my mama didn't tell me in my mama's, you better repeat after me, in my mama's house there is still God, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I didn't have that experience, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like anyone has forced it on me, per se, but, you know, it still was kind of with me a little bit. Like, I still wanted something to rely on. I still wanted to believe that there was something that was looking out for my best interest and that something would make it all right at the end, you know? And so that's kind of where I was, you know, when we met. But, you know, progressively, you know, through conversations with you and conversations with other people and, you know, evaluating my own concepts, like, I came fully to the other side. Like, I was like, 80% on the atheist side, but sticking the toe over to the other side every so often.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, so. That's the thing, because I still remember thinking, okay, this chick obviously is, like, she's obviously... But then you would tell folks, you're like, nope, I'm not. And they'd be like, well,
yeah.
Shit.
Because my experience in knowing about atheists came from people who were interested in not having me become an atheist. You know what I mean? So
right.
My concept of what it was like, okay, well, if you say that you're an atheist, you're just as bad as these Christian folk over here. And,
right.
You know, atheists are bad people, and they're mean people, and they're horrible people.
Baby eaters.
You know, yeah. I didn't think they were baby eaters, you know what I mean? But I just thought they were people who didn't necessarily believe in a moral code. I believed in a moral code, you know what I mean? A moral code that came partially from my Christian background, but not entirely, because I discarded a lot of the parts of it, you know what I mean, that didn't make sense to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, it was, I believed in certain things, and I didn't, and I still felt some connection to, you know, the church community that I grew up in and, you know, those traditions, and I didn't want to separate myself entirely. So I felt like if I called myself an atheist, that would just be, like, the final thing. You know, all those relationships would be severed. And they were, in a way, but the thing about it is that after doing all of that, I gained something else, which was authenticity, and I had to, because I didn't have anything else to rely on, I had to start relying on myself, you
right.
know what I mean? I had to start trusting myself to make decisions. I had to stop dragging my feet and waiting for a quote-unquote answer, which is really nothing but, you know, the last resort, because by that point, all your options are gone. You just got to go with the one that's in front of you because you've been wasting
yep.
all your time praying.
Right, like, goddamn.
I mean?
No other options. This must be God telling me this. Like,
yeah,
no, nigga,
exactly.
No.
Exactly.
That's just your only option.
Exactly. That's just your only option, or the option that now looks the most attractive, or the option that will cause the least amount of pain because you waited so long to make a decision.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that was my problem. And, you know, a lot of things changed for me. I mean, well, I was already sort of in the process of change of, you know, becoming more self-reliant and more self-confident and more, you know what I mean, logical and all those sorts of things. But you know, I didn't trust myself on a lot of things. And so it was an experience, and I'm not going to lie, I was depressed throughout a lot of it. You know what I mean? It's a process, especially for somebody who, you know, was in the community. Like, I wasn't in church every Sunday, but I was a Sunday school teacher for quite a while. I was on the choir.
I really can't imagine you as a Sunday school teacher.
I was a Sunday school teacher. I did. I taught Sunday school to little children. Yeah, I taught them the Apostles' Creed and everything. I still remember the Apostles' Creed, you know.
I said, that's you. I've forgotten all that stuff.
I believe in God the Father, heaven, maker of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord, who was conceived of the Virgin Mary, died, was crucified, dead, and buried, rose on the third day. You don't remember that stuff?
I remember it when you say it. I couldn't say it by heart.
I definitely remember that. I mean, it was, but see, I was in a church that was, I was in the AME church, and, you know, different AME churches sort of operate differently. Like, I've been to AME churches that are more like Baptist churches, but the AME church that the AME church, which was the last church that I actually attended, and the church that I was the Sunday school teacher in, and where I was, you know, in the choir and all of that good stuff. It was the pastor there, and I would never think to ask him this, but I think to a certain degree he has to be either agnostic or someone who's a liberal theist enough to recognize that the Bible is full of holes and full of inaccuracies. But
right.
I think he gets some sort of deeper satisfaction from thinking that there's a God or being in community with people, good people. Because
yeah.
These were good people. No, I didn't go to church with a whole lot of people who were, like, highly judgmental, particularly towards the end. You know, I had been in churches like that before. But towards the end, like, I didn't have that experience. So anyone who ever, like, comes at me with the nonsense, like, oh, well, you just had a bad experience in church, I did not have a bad experience. My last experience particularly was good. You know, I would still be there today except for the fact that I don't believe in God.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's a waste of my time. But I would still go there, you know, just to say hello to some folks. You know what I mean? Not every Sunday.
Because a lot of people are good people.
Yeah, they're good people. They're doing good work.
You form bonds and friendships with them. It's no different than the other friendship you have.
Exactly. And, you know, I just remember asking him questions, and it was never any bullshit. You know what I mean? He would be like, if he didn't know the answer, he'd be like, you know, I don't know the answer. You know, or if he agreed with something that I was like, you know, I don't get this particular story. I don't understand what this is supposed to be telling me. You know, either God approves of this kind of behavior, or I'm supposed to get some sort of deeper meaning from it. So what deeper meaning am I supposed to get from it? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, these were the kinds of conversations I'd have with him. And he would be like, you know, I honestly cannot give you an answer to that. And most of his sermons had nothing to do with that type of stuff. You know, you never got anything like, you know, gays are going to hell or anything like that. It was usually some kind of, you know, humanistic kind of message. You know, like, do good to your fellow man. You know what I mean? You know, honor your family. You know what I mean? You know,
right.
That sort of thing. Take care of the homeless. You know what I mean? Like, these are the kind of messages I was getting. So, like, no one can tell me, like, I just had a bad experience and that's what pushed me out of church.
Right. You know, that's like the common response you get from folks. You either just had a bad experience at church, or you just stop believing because you just want to go do whatever you want to do and not be judged or whatever the hell. Even though despite the fact that vast majority of people, Christians included, already kind of do whatever they want.
Yeah.
It don't make a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They live totally secular lives already.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. Or far more immoral lives than many of the atheists or secularists that they claim, you know, to be the immoral ones. you know.
Of course. Where do you get your Where do you get your morality from if you've you know, there's no God?
Well,
and you're like, well, there's two ways you can go about it. I can either go down, like, I get it from myself, or, you know, we can go back in evolution and talk about, you know, how it's advantageous for us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
however
I mean,
you
and you can,
it.
And I mean, and some people still, you know, I mean, there are some people who still find, you know, moral lessons, you know, from various religions, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, per se, if you're going to, you know, if the end result is you're a more moral individual.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's when you start imposing, some of your beliefs as moral that have nothing to do with morality, per se. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, what two people who aren't, you know, what two people who consent to having sex with one another do in the privacy of their own home. That's not something that you need to have a moral belief about.
Right.
You know?
It's not something you need to be worried about in general.
Exactly. It doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect any other person. The only time that it affects you or society is when that is not a consensual situation. That's when you need
right.
to be concerned about it. But as we've seen, many of these churches are not concerned even about that because they protect their own. But we're not going to go there.
Of course not. So,
yeah.
are there any?
No.
Is
I mean,
there
you can't see me on the choir. You can't see me. You know.
I mean, I've only heard
me.
You sing like once, and that was a
yeah.
long time ago.
Yeah. Well, I was on the choir.
And, in fact, I don't even think you knew I was listening, which kind of sounds weird.
Oh.
But.
No, I think that one time that I sang for you, you were listening. I remember.
Okay. Well, your memory is better than mine, so I got to give you that one
right
there.
Oh, okay. You know why I'm saying that, right?
I do.
Usually you try to insult me. Anyway.
Hey, every broken clock.
Uh-huh.
That's all I'm going to say.
Uh-huh.
Broken
uh-huh.
clock. Right now you're getting an anomaly. This is a rare occasion.
I know.
Never happens.
Crazy. I know, this is very strange. It's very,
yeah,
very strange.
Just savor the moment.
Mm. I'm going to try.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just wanted to call in and add my little story. So.
Well, I was actually going to ask you, like, what do you think about the community at the moment, or the if you even want to call the atheist community a community? So you know it's like herding cats out here.
Oh, it's worse than that. You know, I mean, I think there are some people in the community who are doing good things. I think that there are some folks who are, you know, making strides and you know, trying to improve, you know, the environment, you know, doing things like, you know, trying to promote, you know, further the separation of church and state, people who are advocating for, you know, women's rights, for, you know, for social justice and what have you. And that's great. I have some issues with some people in the atheist community, particularly around, you know, individuals who are kind of have some more of the libertarian beliefs. A lot of them also happen to be heavy into white supremacy, although they don't see it that way, you know, but just in the idea of, you know, silencing voices of individuals who are interested in doing work around social justice issues in particular, and in particular when those social justice issues intersect with race, I find that there's a lot of pushback from certain individuals. And I think that it's I think that there are some incidents that are coming out now around sexual harassment, around feminism, you know, around some of these other things that are troubling, you know, that are very troubling, And I'm inclined to believe some of these accusations that are being made against some of these big names and these big organizations. I won't say which ones, but I'm inclined to believe them for numerous reasons that you and I can talk about
at a different time. Yeah.
But aside from that, I think that there are still issues of representation at some of these conferences and in some of these organizations and their leadership. I think there's
a whole
a lot of
show
issues
on that one.
Yeah, and I think there's some issues in some of the Black atheist groups, or the minority atheist groups that are out here. Some of the feminist ones have issues with race. Some of the skeptical ones have issues with race and social justice. They can't see past science, as a filter.
Yep.
Some of the Black atheists, there's multiple sides to the Black atheist issue. Some of them don't see issues of race. They somehow think that if one believes that we're all Africans, that somehow the social reality of race disappears, just like many of the mainstream white atheists do.
I really hate
and
that.
And then there's some. And then there are some people, yeah, I hate it too. But then there are some people in the Black atheist community that are sort of reactionary Black nationalist types, and they have anti-women agendas, anti-gay agendas. Some of them are anti-white even. Which obviously I'm not even gonna lie, concerns me to a far lesser degree than white supremacy.
Yeah, I know.
Because of what the reality of what systemic racism is, it bothers me far less.
Yeah, so. Mostly because I feel like, just like with me, you can understand the attitudes even if you don't completely agree with all of them.
Yeah,
I can understand where some of the hatred may come from.
Yeah. No, and I can understand where some of the skepticism comes in, too. There have been a lot of some of the language and some of the of skepticism and science. And these are the things that, the major organizations for the most part promote, critical thinking and all that sort of thing. A lot of those things have been used against people of color in particular in the past. And so you can understand why some of them are highly skeptical of the mainstream agendas, in these movements. And so you can sympathize somewhat with the attitude or the position, but not necessarily with, some of the specific beliefs and things like that. So,
right. I think that's why it's so important for us to have, folks who look like them, represented in these movements. That can change the perception of atheism, because if you're already distrustful of science and you're super religious, and the only thing you know about atheists is that 99% of them are white and they're assholes about science and critical thinking and whatnot, that's not really something you're really going to want to subscribe to. At all. That's going to be a turn off of itself.
Absolutely. I've failed to mention also, some of the Islamophobia. You know what I mean? That is a turn off to many.
Islamophobia, you know that doesn't exist.
Oh, no, it does. And people will say all the time.
We're just critiquing Islam. That's all it is.
Yeah, some of them are. You know what I mean? And I think some of them sincerely are just critiquing Islam and what it stands for. But there's a difference between critiquing Islam and attacking Muslims. And to be frank, Muslims, by and large, are people of color. They're people of color, or they're Arabs, they're they're Africans, they're Indonesians, they're, you know what I mean? They are people who are non-white. And
yep.
So when somebody makes a statement like, you know, Muslims don't have as many Nobel Prizes as, you know, Trinity College or whatever, you know, that is a remark that is tinged with some racism, frankly.
Right.
You know, you're not referring to an institution. It's not like this person referred to Islamic universities.
Right.
You know what I mean? He referred to Muslims. You understand? And even if he referred to Islamic universities, there are numerous factors to consider. You know what I mean? In those discussions. You know, for one, the totalitarian regimes that we see in the Islamic world are largely due to contact with Western civilizations from, you know, long-term conflicts, from the positioning of totalitarian regimes in the
right.
Middle East by Western powers. So when we have these discussions, we have to consider these factors in these talks, because otherwise we're just affirming white supremacy.
Right. But a lot of these folks are uneducated, and you know people, I don't want to say people in general are simplistic, but a lot of people are simplistic in their approach to this. They're ignorant to a lot, and they're okay with being ignorant to a lot because they feel like they already understand all they need to know.
Right. I mean, you know, if you want sort of a watered down, easy to swallow, semi-comical, reference, you know, to this information, you can watch a movie like Argo. You know, there is reference to what I'm talking about.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, there is a reference in the beginning of Argo to, to what sort of Western imperialism what its effect has been in the Middle East, or North Africa, rather. And what it has meant for these sorts of conflicts and how these things have come about, we have to consider these things. You know, these are discussions that have to talk about imperialism, have to talk about resources, have to talk about the influence of Western corporations, you know, even apart from, the government sort of imperialism, but the economic imperialism, you know.
Right.
So we have to consider these things when we talk about, you know, Islam and Muslims and sort of what the impact of fundamentalist Islam has been and how we got there, because a lot of these countries were not looking like this in the 1970s, you know.
Right.
You know, Afghanistan was on its way to modernizing, you know. So these are in the 1960s rather. You know, it was on the 1960s, 1970s. They were on their way to modernizing. Where are they now? You know what I mean?
Yep.
This is not always the case. Yeah. So we have to think about these things.
Yep. So. This is why I always got to stress for education. Again,
we also have to consider, you know, that there's, you know, some cultural, racial, you know, institutional, and sort of other forms of bias that goes into what determines who gets nominated for Nobel Prizes and who receives Nobel Prizes. So we have
right.
to keep that in mind, too, you know?
Yep. And I was going to say the last thing, because if you look at how the two different religions are critiqued or spoken about, Christianity is critiqued with way more respect than Islam. Christians don't really receive, I want to say, as awful criticism or stereotypes as Muslims do.
I think for two reasons. And the two reasons are as follows. Christianity is part of Western culture. You cannot talk about Western culture without talking about Christianity, period. You know, even if you talk about the secular elements of Western culture, you are still dealing with Christianity. Because
right.
even some of the secular principles that we hold dear, you know, were founded or built upon, you know, built on, rather, the work of some Christian thinkers. Our ideas about objectivism, you know what I mean, all of these sorts of things, they come from Christianity. The other part is that they also have, when we're talking about Christianity, by and large, when we're talking about the West, we are sort of in a paradigm that is dominated by Europeans or European descendants. You know, the major church in Christianity is what? The Catholic Church. And you're either Catholic or you're Protestant. And there are a handful of churches that exist outside of the European culture or Western, European Western culture. You know, you have the Coptic Church, which is very small. You know, you have a European Orthodox Church, which doesn't really affect people of color very much. You know, and pretty much all of the traditions that people of color have with respect to Christianity come out of either the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church, period.
Right.
So there's still the sort of Western cultural affinity there. So you have to kind of examine it from that perspective. Islam has not been influenced by, the Renaissance and by the Enlightenment and, you know, all of these sort of Western ideals. And for that reason, it's because it stands sort of opposed in some people's minds, it appears oppositional, they're hostile towards it.
Right.
You know? And don't get me wrong, I'm hostile towards a lot of elements that I find in Islam, but I'm hostile towards a lot of elements I find in Western culture and in Christianity in particular.
Right.
You know, but standing against elements within Islam and standing against elements within Christianity does not mean that I am against Christians. Yeah.
Or
that I'm against Christians or I'm against Muslims. You know, I'm against many of their beliefs, but I'm not against the people. Not unless
the people themselves,
are, you know,
right.
Yeah, not unless those people are like, you know, horrible individuals, like, you know, some of these evangelical ministers who try to, like, you know, de-gay people but actually end up fucking them up even worse. You know.
Of
like
course,
those
yeah.
people.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got about 7 minutes. I'm about to put you on hold so I can get ready to end the show.
Well, it's okay. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Deuces. Although, stick around because I'm going to play a song. Actually, wait. I have another caller. 773.
Hi. This is Cheryl in Chicago, and boy, I raced home to try to get in on the conversation, and did I miss everything. So, hi, everybody.
Darn.
Oh, gosh. Well, hi, everybody. I just want to say hi and at least let everybody know. Kim, if you're there, I'm alive. Okay. Okay. Gee, I guess I don't really have anything to say. I was going to reply to something that I was listening to just a couple of seconds ago, but it's okay. I'll have to just do it on the next. I'll have to do it on the next call. So go ahead and end your show. And bye, everybody.
All right, hey, thanks for calling in.
Sure, no problem.
All right, guys, getting down to the last 6 minutes or so of the show. This has been another edition of the Breakbeat. I'm going to end the show by playing the song I played earlier in my show. Remember, we're here to educate, entertain, and enlighten you all, and hopefully give you new perspectives to consider. Go check the archives. Like, you have lots of great shows. Check us out on iTunes. Special shout out to Raina for calling in, for Cheryl who just called in a couple seconds ago, and yeah, that's about it. So just remember, in 2 weeks we have I'm going to be doing a show on race relations at these otaku gamer conventions. And if you have no idea what any of that's about, then I definitely encourage you to listen in, because it's a subject that, as far as I know, has never really been discussed on this show. And, yeah. So with that being said, we're going to end this with my new song called Alone. All right. Peace out, everybody.
Went to private school most of my life, trying to get closer to Christ. A sober thought, devoting my life to scripture, making sure I'm quoting it right. Walking ever close to the light, but the notes that I write aren't genuine. And so I'm questioning the foundation of the sentiment. Saying, the more I think about it, my thoughts are so crowded. And the more I research, the more that I would read, the more I started doubting everything that I believed. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, started running shit. Convince me that my life is a sunken ship that needs to be resurrected, so I didn't wreck it. This is the message, this on me is a blessing. I need to go, cause even if I say I feel, come on, I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. Went to high school surrounded by the Catholics, agnostic thoughts in my head, I couldn't fathom it. Priest, family, and friends was all passionate about these ideas, but I really wasn't having it. I wanted to believe that book, I really wanted to, but atheism was the reality my world was coming to. So I put it in perspective, it was hard to accept it, so I started to reject it. Non-believer, free thinker, couldn't push the feeling to the side like a street sweeper. Couldn't bury the emotion in a deep freezer, unable to communicate like a chief speaker. This is me making sense of the madness, told my friends about it and they're wondering what happened. So I drift into the unknown, friends become strangers, and come on, I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. Years later, here I am at 25, the non-believer scaring children like Pennywise. Many died from a faith-filled, troubled life, American history drenched in the blood of Christ. Nothing nice about trying to live puppet-like, so I don't covet the Bible, only covet Mike. And it's all okay, so I know I'll never ever say. Started living for the first time, was never born again, after I realized that I was never born in sin. I was born to win words to my man adequate, cause only my rap verses be immaculate. Mind relieved, so I can find peace, black man who led belief in the divine seat. I found a new home long gone to the days where I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life. I stopped trying to be Christ-like and took control of my own life.
It's okay to be an atheist because it's okay to be yourself. It is okay to be true to yourself. I can't stress that enough. I remember my state of mind before I came out of the closet as an atheist, and I was a liar. I lied to people that I ministered to. I ministered the Bible and the things that I was taught in the church, but I no longer believed it. I was following the script, and it was okay for me to follow the script because I felt coming out as an atheist was not an option at that time. When I became tired of the liar I had become, I had no choice but to come out as an atheist.